traditional publishing, how to share your ministry experience with a wider audience. So if that's not what you're looking for, you're about to get a surprise. So thanks for coming. As I think most of you probably know, I've been on staff with Crew for almost 20 years and have been publishing in traditional professional publishing in the Christian world for 8 years. In a variety of places. The person who's going to be sharing with you today, he's standing to my left, is a guy who's been in traditional publishing much, much longer than me. And he has a lot of experience. He's worked at multiple publishers. I'll let him share those with you. But I'll tell you this. One of the things, this is Don Pave, by the way. He's the publisher at NAF Press. One of the things I love about Don, this is our first time like actually hanging out today. We've met in the past. But we were talking about publishing. They're doing one of my books next summer. And we were talking about books. He's showing me different books, covers he likes, you know, and all the things like gutters on the inside and all these technical publishing terms that made me realize he's like a really uptight, perfectionistic professional about publishing, which is exactly what you want when you're an author. You're like, please take care of this thing that I've poured my life into and make something amazing. So all that to say, Don knows what he's talking about. You can trust him and his insights. And if you have questions about publishing in general, he's worked in all different parts of the industry. So without further ado, here's Don Pape.
I think what he meant to say was, I'm anal. And I am. I have been publishing in publishing for 32 years. Really got into it through graphic arts and doing posters. And then actually my first start was in a warehouse picking, packing, and shipping books. And I got the bug and kind of worked my way up through creative design, did some sales and marketing. And then I worked for a small company in Colorado Springs, Waterbrook Press, where I was overseeing the sales, and we acquired Harold Shaw Publishers. Probably the greatest highlight of that moment was working with a lady author named Madeline L'Engle. Some of you may be familiar with A Wrinkle in Time. I got to introduce Walking on Water and a number of other great books to the market through that crotchety old lady, and had a lot of fun with her. Then I moved from Waterbrook and Harold Shaw to David C. Cook. Some of you are probably familiar with them. They're known as a curriculum house, and I went over there to help launch their trade books, and probably one of our best known authors to you or to the trade was Francis Chan, and a little book called Crazy Love. And that story is always fun to tell because I was at home one day and my son, who was going to Azusa Pacific, had gone to chapel that day, which in and of itself was worthy of a phone call. But he called and said, Dad, I just went to chapel and I heard this pastor from Simi Valley. He's awesome. You should check him out. And the rest is history. So I thank Jeremy for that tip. And so then from David C. Cook, about 3.5 years ago, I went over to Navigators. Navigators, much like Crew, is a not-for-profit ministry on military bases, on college campuses, etc. I wasn't really aware of the ministry of the Navigators. I just knew they did discipleship. And so I went over there to head up the Nav Press team. And banner under which we publish is discipleship, but that's a big, broad banner. And so we are doing parenting books, marriage books, Matt's book on evangelism, a number of books. There's some samples up here. You can come up and grab them. They're free. I don't want to take them home. So just tell Nate that you didn't steal it from the store, that it is indeed free. But you're here because you have questions about what publishers are looking for and the ins and outs of getting your writing published. I want to say this. The industry has changed tremendously over the past 30 years. 20 years ago, even more, when I first started out, there was this association called Christian Booksellers Association, and Christian publishers published books for Christian bookstores. So Family Christian Store, Lifeway, Books and Bible, Evangel, Good News Shop, Shepherd Store, name one of those fancy store names that they come up with. That's who we served and whom was our channel for distribution. That has not been the case for probably about 5 years. The Christian retail channel for us is about 10% of our business. And so we have a challenge before us where we are trying to find a consumer. So that's one of the biggest challenges that we face as Christian publishers is finding you. Who's going to read our books and how do we get to them? Now, Amazon, as you all know, is the elephant in the room. It is our biggest client, but it can also be a difficult client and set some expectations. So we, as a publisher, all of the publishers right now are just like many Christian churches, looking around and trying to find out what are we going to do with those empty pews, or as a publisher, how are we going to find someone to read my book? 30 years ago, we would publish a book like Bad Girls of the Bible by Liz Curtis Hakes. We'd ship 85,000 copies out the first week of distribution, and it would keep selling. Now, in the first week of a book shipping out, if it really does well, it's shipping about 1,000, 2,000 copies. The average book sells 500 copies and it dies. It used to be that book publishers would, Christian publishers, publish a book and it would have a long tail, it would be out there. Now I know Christian publishers, they'll put a book out, and if it doesn't sell in the first 9 months, it goes out of print. And so there's a lot of new challenges that face us. The other challenge that we're faced with is we have a new audience. We used to publish books that would be 60, 70,000 words and people wouldn't complain. The new reader, millennials, those of you in the audience who are millennials, or just readers in general, we're used to not reading as much. I posted on my Facebook recently an excellent article by Philip Yancey that says we're not reading like we used to. We're reading in sound bites. We read, you know, a blurb from USA Today or a Facebook posting or a Twitter, and that's all that matters. So we, again, as publishers, have a challenge before us. We recently did a book called A Woman's Guide, The General Art of Discipling Women. The author is in her mid-60s, and she gave us a great book. It was 72,000 words, and so we gave it to our millennial editor, and she got it down to 32.5, because that's what the audience wants. So we have some challenges before us. Categories that continue to sell well are Christian living, applied memoir or spiritual growth, and devotionals. I'm sure many of you are familiar with Jesus Calling. And there's Jesus Calling for kids, Jesus Calling for women, Jesus Calling for pet parakeets. There's a Jesus Calling for just about anybody out there. That's an example of a book that sells because of its length. You can read, you know, a passage in less than 15, 20 minutes. And again, that's our reality. NAB Press is looking for three things when we look at your submission. We're looking to see, is it biblically based? So is there either a Bible study that goes with it, or is there a text that you're basing your work on? Is it culturally relevant? When I read this, is it speaking to my time? Is it speaking to a millennial reader? Is it speaking to the issues of the day, whatever they may be? And then, is it highly practical? So those are the three things. Biblically based, culturally relevant, and highly practical. We do not publish cookbooks. We do not publish fiction. But in the category of nonfiction, those are the three things we're looking for. So that allows us to do Bible studies. It allows us to do devotionals, Christian living titles, and the like. Now, some of you are sitting here wondering, okay, do I have a chance at getting published? If it's good, Yes. The reality is, in my lifetime, I've seen us go from where the traditional publisher was the only way you got published. So you had to contact a literary agent, try to get in front of a publishing house that would then take it to the editorial board review it, and then ultimately you'd get a contract with a traditional publishing house. We've seen the rise, obviously, in the past 5 or 6 years of people self-publishing. You have people self-publishing only digital books, so you write novels or romance, novellas, whatever, just for Kindle, so only ebook distribution, or you can get iInspire or a variety of self-publishing places that will publish your book and you pay them. So Westbow Press is an example of a house in Nashville where you can go and you can buy a package, and you can buy a package that says they will edit, design your cover, and publish your book, or just print your book. Those are the options for self-publishing. And that is becoming more of a necessary thing. When I look out at this room and see you, there's a lot of people in this room, and I'm here to tell you I'm only going to publish in this coming year 18 new books. So kind of look around and say, are you one of the 18? I'm just kidding. The reality is we're just not doing as many books because the channels are not available. So it's become necessary for writers to find the self-publishing route. And I am going to take a question so as we go along, as well as at the end. But yes, you had a question related to that?
You personally or you Nav Press?
Nav Press. So the question was if Nav Press only publishes 18 titles. So if you look, you can check catalogs online. Zondervan is probably publishing 400, 500 new titles a year. Waterbrook is probably in the vicinity of 100. David C. Cook, 100. We are in an alliance with Tyndale House Publishers out of Chicago. And so they do all our printing and warehousing, sales and marketing. Our office just does editorial. So we acquire 18 new titles a year, and then in addition to that, we also publish Backlist and the Message Bible. So we're always looking at other product in that. But what that means for you as you sit here is if you're not one of the 18, it's possible your book wouldn't be published for years and years and years. So when we receive manuscripts, we try to encourage the author to find another house or consider self-publishing if that's an option they want to go to as well. Yes?
Crew used to have a publishing group, didn't they? Like New Life?
So the question was, Crew used to have self-publishing. I think they still do. It's called Crew Press. And Rick James, who's not unable to be here because of family reasons, he's not here, but he would be the one that I think oversees the program.
We have different arms of publishing and Crew. So there is Crew Press. There's a press that does all Dr. Bright's books. Bright, I think it's called Bright Media. Yeah, thank you. So there are two or three different ways, maybe four. I think Jesus Film does some of the books as well.
New Life does some.
And New Life, yeah. So there are multiple channels within Crew that do some publishing as well. That's true. I should say, most, with the exception of a couple of those branches, a lot of those are for resources that are primarily in-house, meaning we don't distribute them to bookstores. They'll be up on Amazon, let's say, but you won't find them at Barnes & Noble or something like that.
So if you're sitting here thinking, I've got a great book idea, how do I get published? What I first encourage you to do is find a local group that's a writer's group. So oftentimes, churches in your area might have a church writing group. There may be a public library that would be more sort of secular. But try to find a group in your community that encourages writing and the skill of writing. And it's there that you start out. That's where you'll be able to test a chapter of your book, get some feedback on your tone, your voice, what have you. The other thing I encourage you to consider is oftentimes there are writers' conferences. So Mount Hermon is probably the biggest one in California. There's one in Asheville, North Carolina. I believe there's one in Florida. There's a great book resource out there called The Christian Writer's Market Guide. Used to be Sally Stewart. I believe it's Steve Lobby that is managing it now. But it's called The Christian Writer's Market Guide. And it's a great resource for you as a writer. It tells you all the literary agents that are out there for you to consider. It tells the publishing houses what they're looking for. So, for example, we're looking for discipleship focus. But Harvest House might be looking more for gift-type books or cookbooks or children's books. So that guide is an excellent resource for you. And in the Writers' Conference, so start there. After you've got, yes?
What was that resource that you just said?
Yeah, so it's Christian Writers Market Guide.
Thank you.
And the original author was Sally Stewart. But I think you can find it now just as Christian Writer's Market Guide. The other thing, at the risk of getting inundated this coming week, my email is don.pape@navpress.com. So just not run out of business cards, because some of you probably come up and say, do you have a business card? That's my email. Feel free to email me. And if you have questions, I'm happy to address them. Or if you have you want a referral to an agent or a recommended publishing house that would consider your work, I'm happy to do that. So feel free to do that. I'll erase it in like 20 seconds. No, I'm just kidding. Yes?
What about crossover topics that are highly practical in the secular world as well as a faith-based world or nonprofit world?
Yeah. That's a great question. So the question he asks is, what about crossover writers? So like writing a faith-based book for general market. Our number one book for sales at NAB Press is a book just like that. It's called Parenting with Love and Logic. It's a parenting book written with Christian principles, but it got picked up by PBS, it's been picked up by Barnes & Noble, and it's sold very well in the secular market. But it's a parenting book. My answer typically is you have to really choose whose side you're on. And I say that from experience. I published at Waterbrook Press and worked with Random House. Prior to that, I worked for Doubleday. And oftentimes we'd get a book, so we would get a book from an author, say, Kay Arthur. And it would come in and we'd say, this would be a really good book on marriage to go into the general market. The issue for the general market was it was too many Bible verses. And so you can't really go to a Bible teacher and say, hey, you've got to cut out all the Bible verses. So you really have to choose your market and say, this is going to be a business book. I'll infuse it with biblical principles, but it's going to be a business book. Or it's got some biblical principles, but it's really going to be a Bible-based book on finances, something
so
like that.
What if you had a companion guide for the Christian reviewer? Is that another way to do that? So in other words, I took out all the Christianese,
sure.
Took out the Bible verses, took out some, you know, you can get a whiff of Christianity,
sure.
But it almost screams for the parables or for something.
Sure.
You know where it's at in the Bible, but it's not referenced.
Sure.
How do you deal with that?
It's done. And it depends on the individual. I did a book called The Fred Factor with an author called Mark Sanborn. And we did two editions. We did a Christian version and a secular version. And that was really to satisfy his audiences. So Mark was often speaking for IBM, and a lot of sort of blue chip companies. And then he was also going to speak to CBA or Christian Businessmen's Association. And so we had two distinct ISBNs and they went both ways. Now, what we don't want is for there to be any sort of conflict so that the author is saying one thing to the secular audience and another thing to that. But that does happen.
Okay.
It's rare, but it does happen. Probably where I see it the most from my past is in business books, where a number of the books that are written from Portfolio or Crown Business
They're written actually by Christian businessmen, Ken Blanchard perhaps, or another Christian person. And you can tell when you read, I believe this guy's a believer. It's just they're infusing it with Judeo-Christian ethics and
well,
things
those guys
like that.
Are the inspiration.
Yeah. So it can be done.
Okay.
Yeah. It really is your audience. You have to determine your audience. If your audience is going to be sort of middle-of-the-road believers in a business setting, then you can do that, if that makes sense. Yeah. I'm going to... I talked about conferences, writers, groups... Once you've got to that point, then you want to submit to either the agent or the publisher a really good proposal. Now, when I say really good proposals, that, as Matt already alluded to, I am anal. And one of the things that puts a proposal down on my desk really quickly are typos. And it's amazing. With spell check, we still get proposals that come in where they talk about their book being there. T-H-E-R-E as opposed to T-H-E-I-R. And that's the first sign to a publisher that you probably should have a heads up about their writing skills. Okay, so make sure your proposal is really good. One of the things that we're looking for in there is what's your voice like? So do provide us with samples. We want to know, it doesn't have to be the whole book. In publishing, generally speaking, if you're writing fiction, that's where it's great to have the complete manuscript. So the whole novel is available to us to read. So then we know, okay, what's the arc of the story? Where is it going to land? Who's going to die? Who's not going to die? Those kind of things. With nonfiction, it's really a couple of chapters, your introduction. We'll get a feel for your voice and know, yeah, this is really original sound. This guy's got a good voice. I like his style, his humor, what have you. The other thing that's very important is please, please provide comparative titles. Believe it or not, there's nothing new under the sun, okay? And so we're not going to sit there with a proposal and believe you when you say there really is nothing. This is unlike anything else on the market. This is not like Left Behind. This is not like Parenting with Love and Logic. This is not like Love and Respect. This is unique. It's all of those books in a sci-fi, no. Really, do your homework. And this is where it's a little bit hard, because you'll think, well, there's nothing like my writing, and that's true enough. But look at two or three titles and be able to compare them and contrast. So where, you know, having a Mary Hart and Martha world spoke to this story in the Bible by Joanna Weaver, my book is going to look at this passage of scripture with Ruth and Naomi, or whatever, but in the style of blah, blah, blah. It shows to us that you actually are being realistic about the market, that you researched your audience and comparative titles, and know what kind of you're talking about. That's really important to us, okay? The other thing people often say, well, what about a platform? Do I need a platform? And the answer is, you know, you don't have to get on Oprah to get our attention. What we're really looking for is really good writing. And so what probably most excites us when we're in an editorial meeting is when we get a proposal and we read a sample chapter and we go, this is really good. And we talk about it for weeks and weeks. Remember that proposal that came in from that young girl that lived in San Diego? Her husband's a Marine. She's writing about home. That's what we're looking for. So it's not just platform. Now you can use your circle of friends. So if you happen to be a cousin twice removed from Jerry Jenkins, or you know somebody who knows somebody that can give you an endorsement, that really helps. But at the end of the day, we're really looking for good writing. And that you can speak to your topic, whether it's marriage, or parenting, or, you know, being a man in today's world, whatever the topic is, that you're really executing good writing. Now, you don't have to be a Steinbeck, if you think that's a good writer, but we do want, you know, to be thoughtful writing, and that's what we're looking for. Most publishers are looking for that. Okay, we're looking for voices.
I think that's all I had in my outline here. I wanted to cover the basis, and I really wanted to open it up to questions, and because I don't know who's sitting here, and you know what person is sitting on the bestseller and which one's not. But yes.
Do I understand that you can go with the Kindle marketing program for self-publishing and seek paper publishing? That you have the rights to do that with their program? That's what I thought I read and understood.
So the question is, can I do digital publishing only through Kindle and then do a paper product, a physical product elsewhere? I don't know the answer to that, simply because I know that you can, there's your digital options are abounding. So you can have an EPUB version, a Kindle version, a Nook version. There's, I think, 56 different varieties of e-products out there, and I don't know if Amazon, truthfully, would allow you to be on Kindle and then do a physical book somewhere else.
I can answer that, actually. They will, but you won't find a publisher to get the paper rights. Unless you're already selling bazillions of books as an ebook-only author or an independent author, publishers do not want to take the risk of putting all their money and resources in putting the paper together and selling it for you. Like, they want to know it'll sell if they're going to do that, because they make a lot of money off the e-rights.
So you lower, or almost bring your chances to nil of finding a paper publisher if you start Kindle marketing first.
Most publishers would see that as a previously published book and will assume that you've already exhausted your audience and your connections for selling the books that they would have made money on.
Okay.
Yeah, so basically you're destroying your platform, is how they look at it.
Now, we last year we did a book with Michael Frost that previously had existed as an exponential ebook. And we basically, that's no longer out there. And we did a new edition, so took the concepts of the ebook, turned it into a book called Surprise the World, and it's now available as a digital and a physical book, and then the old edition went away.
Yeah, because Hope for the Weary Mom is one that started Kindle and then went paper. I'd heard lots about the quote new hybrid possibility.
Yeah, so Michael Frost is a great example where most people in this room have already heard of Michael Frost. He put it up probably as a one-off and started selling really well. And then he said, oh, let's look to a publisher. And Don looked at it and said, yeah, I think we can probably do something.
Yeah, because if it takes off wildly on Amazon, then your chances are different.
Well, then because the publisher thinks they can expand your reach then.
And that's true of physical books, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, Mark Sanborn's Fret Factor book was originally self-published. He sold 12,000, and then we acquired it, and it sold, I think, 1 million copies. But he just didn't have the wherewithal to get it out into all the channels. It basically was a book he used at merch tables. There's another author, I think, Richard Paul Evans, who's written The Christmas Box or something like that. He had got it out there, sold, 100,000 copies, and then Simon & Schuster swooped in, bought it, and sold millions more. So, yeah. Yes.
What's the appropriateness or protocol as far as sending a proposal to an agent or a publisher without an introduction?
Unsolicited?
Yes.
So what's the appropriateness of sending an unsolicited manuscript to an agent or a publisher? Well, you could do like Debbie did, just pop into my office and say, hey, come down to the foyer, I've got a proposal for you. which you did. It's appropriate. I mean, in terms of getting in front of, you're going to have to get something in front of an agent and or a publisher. So, but do your research. There's nothing worse than opening a letter that, to me, dear Don Pape, I know that Zondervan is currently, and it's like, I'm not Zondervan, so don't, but it's those kind of things that publishers, those are the kind of stories that we sit around editorial tables talking about you all when we get together. We got this letter from this guy. Anyway, yeah, so it is appropriate. And obviously, if you're looking for an agent, that's your entry point. But you'll want to check out agents again to see, let's say you're doing a Bible study, you may send it to an agent that says, I don't represent Bible studies. I just do fiction.
So it's important. And that's why that Christian Writers Market Guide is such a great resource. You'll be able to flip through it and find out, okay, this agent, they specialize in children's books, and this agent specializes in prophecy, or whatever, for example.
So I guess a follow-up to that is, would you, as a publisher, prefer to interact with an agent or with an author directly?
Are there any, we're recording this, aren't we?
Matt's agent is awesome. I love Wes Yoder. He makes an amazing shoe fly pie. So he won me over. Agents are, you know, the publishing relationship is like a marriage, okay? And so the agent is sort of like the Jewish grandmother, bringing you together with me, and we're going to be happily ever after. And so there are some Jewish grandmothers we like, and some we don't. And that's just kind of personal preference. But I would say that should be true for authors, is that when they find an agent, it should be one that they really like, okay? So Debbie, for example, found Les Stobie. He's an agent in a Pennsylvania area. Great elder statesman, been in the business since Wittenberg. And he really knows his stuff. He knows all the publishers out there. And he's trusted. So that's what you're looking for. And so that's what we look for, too, is this agent that I'm going to deal with, is he trustworthy? Is this a good relationship? I tell my editors every time we meet, you know, life is too short to be in the business of publishing people we don't like hanging out with. And so, you know, we are fortunate in our boutique relationship of only doing 18 books a year that we can sort of handpick the books. But we're handpicking books that we like. Not only do we like its content, but we really enjoy hanging out with the authors. Yeah. You had a question, ma'am.
Do you publish memoir or biography?
We, you know, that's a great question. Do we publish memoir or biography? Sadly, in the Christian market, memoir has gotten a bugaboo. And so we've called it Christian Living, Applied Memoir, whatever. But the answer is at NatPress, we do. And we just recently did a wonderful story of a missionary couple that worked at the Islamic Republic of Mauritania, and it's a great story of this family. It's called We Died Before We Came Here, and it's a really good story. And so if it's a real, it's what I said earlier, if it's a really good story, we love to do it. What I found interesting coming from Random House, in the secular world, people love biographies. Biographies sell really well, whether it's, you know, Nancy Reagan's biography or, you know, a pop star or what have you, they do really well. In the Christian market, for some reason, they don't do as well. So it's really hard to get them into the bookstores. But, yeah. Yes?
As group staff, is there anything that you would really like to see us write about that you think would be good for the market?
So the question is, as crew staff, is there anything you want us to be writing for the market? I'm 58, and I think my recognition is that a lot of the books that I like aren't necessarily the books that my 25-year-old son is going to read or like. And I think that's our biggest challenge that I, as a publisher, am faced with. I've got my 92-year-old mother over here that loves this stuff, and I've got my 20-something sons over here that don't like what grandma really reads. I mean, you know, I can put Kay Arthur and Elizabeth Elliot in front of them, but I don't think they're gonna, you know, drop their snowboard book or magazine. So that is our biggest challenge, and I guess that's what I would throw out to you as writers, is how do we write thoughtful, Bible-based books for this next generation? This next generation forgive me, but biblically illiterate. And so that's a really big challenge. There was a time when we would publish books and there'd be assumptions made that when we reference the story of Joseph and his brothers, they knew who Joseph and his brothers were. That, sadly, is not the case anymore. And so that's our biggest challenge. And so writing those thoughtful books whether it's a book on parenting for kids who have grown up in broken homes, or a book on marriage, again, broken homes, or what have you. We have an audience that's not coming in with what I had the fortunate part of earlier in my career. I published books to an audience that had a Christian worldview. They may not have been believers, but they would read Christian books, and we don't have that luxury any longer. So that's our biggest challenge. Yes, at the very back.
So you talked about nonfiction in the secular versus Christian publishing world. But what about fiction? Like, if you're trying to get like a Trojan horse gospel to the secular world, would choosing a publisher like Nav Press or Crew Press hurt your chances at exposing an audience to things stealthy gospel?
So she's asking the question, this is dealing with fiction in particular, can you write her word stealthy gospel in fiction? And it's what I said to this gentleman earlier, know your audience. There are some, in my opinion, some of the best Christian fiction is not published by Christian publishing houses. Probably one of the best Christian novels out there is a novel by Peace Like a River by Lee Fenger. I don't know if you're familiar with that book. There's a scene in there that captures sexual purity without any kind of an agenda. You read it and go, he is all in favor of abstinence. But it doesn't come across heavy-handed like a Steve Arterburn book or, you know, True Love Waits kind of book. So it can be done. I'm in the process. I serve on the Christie Awards program. It's an award program for fiction. And I'm in the process of reading some really good books and some really bad books. And some of the really good books are the ones that are doing what you say. They're stealth. You read it. You know that this person has a belief, but they don't have an agenda. Okay? I had the privilege years ago of publishing Jan Karen. Some of you know her for At Home in Mitford. She became a Christian later in life. At 55, she met the Lord, and she started writing. She wanted to write about this little town in upstate North Carolina or South Carolina. And they're beautiful stories. They're wholesome stories, but there's a thread of faith in there. And she's done it well. Another writer is Susan Meister that's done it well. But they're writers that are doing it with out an agenda. I think when you infuse an agenda, you're proselytizing. And if you like really good books, you don't want to read the Narnia series and have someone on your shoulder saying, now the lion's Jesus, the lion's Jesus. You should be able to make those discoveries naturally. So did I just open a cap? Yes, sir.
Two questions. One is, I've already published a chapter in a book with an anthology, a lot of other things. But I want to turn that chapter into a full-length book. Does that create problems for copyright for what's already been done?
No, because it's just a sample chapter?
Well, no, it's an anthology on a collection of issues, and I take a particular issue and write on it.
Okay, so this gentleman has published a chapter in an anthology, and now is thinking about doing a book on that particular topic. So you just take that one chapter and expanding it, say, on world health or whatever. I'm just making it up. No, that's not a problem. What you'd want to do in the copyright page is say, chapter one was previously published by Norton in the whatever the compendium is. But let the reader know that one chapter they have read. And that's pretty common. You'll read, you know, Andy Crouch, this previously was excerpted in Christianity Today, or this article was in Moody. Yeah, that's doable.
My other question was, how do you find a good agent?
That's, when you go to writers' conferences, if you go to a writers' conference, you can meet agents at these events and kind of get a feel for, I like that person, I can follow up with them. Talk to other writers. Talk to Matt or people you know who have an agent and say, who would you recommend? Again, if you were to email me, I could give you two or three names of people that I like and trust and say, and it would, again, depend on your category. If you're looking for fiction, I can name five fiction agents that would be awesome. If you're looking for nonfiction, it's a different story. So it really is on your genre. The gentleman with glasses. Go ahead.
A follow-up about the fiction question. So actually on the other way, so on something that's a little bit, you know, less having to be stealthy, who are the strongest Christian publishers for speculative fiction?
So the question was, who are the strongest publishers for speculative fiction? There was an organization called Gideon Press that acquired Lord Archer. And Lord Archer used to be speculative fiction only. And if you can track down who's doing them, I had heard that Gideon had acquired them, and then I heard that they also ran into financial difficulties. So that's why I'm hesitant. But I also believe that Bethany House is doing some speculative fiction. Patrick Carr, I think, is someone that does it in that genre. It's a great genre, and it's much more appreciated in the general market than in the Christian market. But there are a few publishers out there.
Yeah, and kind of the follow-up to that is, if you go general market, you can make it, like you said, a little less overt, less agenda-driven. If you go a Christian publisher route, what would be the opposite kind of expectation or rule?
They'll want to have some kind of thread, Christian thread in it. Just given the nature of it, it sort of lends itself to otherworldly, if you will. But there'll have to be a faith element to the story. Yeah. Yes.
So if your audience is the younger generation, is it more effective to do e-books? I mean, will you have a broader audience?
That's a good question. So the question was, if your audience is younger, should you do more e-books? We do, as a principle, most publishing houses release physical and digital simultaneously. So when this book comes out, it will be available both as a physical book and as an e-book. Okay? What's interesting about your question is the audience for most digital books is 55 plus. There used to be, we noticed for a while when ebooks first came out, YA was strong and that 18 to 25 were a principal consumer, and it's dropped down. And the major consumer of ebooks is that 55 plus audience.
So the younger ones, are they reading books at all?
Yeah, no, they love books. And what's interesting, when you talk to certain millennials, this is not just a book. This is an artifact. You know, you can pick it up, you can feel the cover, smell the paper, the artifacts. That's an experience. Yeah. So imagine when we get these boxes. You should see all the six of us when a box of books comes straight from the printer. We're opening it up and like a bunch of geeks wandering around caressing books. It's kind of silly. But it's a treasured artifact. And I think that's what... What's interesting is that this next generation thinks that about books. They may not read a lot of them, but the few that they do have are treasured artifacts. Yes?
This is totally different. About finances. If you publish with a publisher as an author, what should you expect when you get a contract as far as how much money you'll make?
So if you're getting to Christian publishing, you're doing it as unto the Lord. I'm just kidding. So the question was, if I get into this book business, will I get some commensuration? Will I get some money back? And the answer is hopefully yes. And I would say, having been on both sides, I was an agent for 19 months and then a publisher, that you want... you're going to have an agent that will come and represent you, or you'll get your product in front of the publisher. And typically what I want is to make sure you are compensated for the work that you've done. Because I don't realize you're going to sit and knock this book off in a couple of hours. It could take you 2 months, it could take you a year. So I recognize that. So I put a value on your project, and then I also then do this pesky thing that finance wants called P&Ls. And P&Ls and creative people are not harmonious, but we have to do them. So we look at this and we say, okay, if I pay you this much money and your book is $15 and we're going to sell it for $7.50 because it's going to be 50% off to the average store, how many books do I need to sell of your book at $7.50 to allow me to pay you $7,500, $10,000, what have you? And so I'll look, that's what I do. I look at a spreadsheet and I think, okay, I would really like to offer you $15,000 for this book. I think we could make it. And then I'll plug in the numbers and I'll look at a 12-month period. Now, interestingly enough, it used to be we could look at 12 months of sales and say, I think we're going to earn out. That is not happening anymore. Remember when I mentioned to you that we used to ship 85,000 copies of a book out to, you know, 5,000 bookstores? Now we're shipping 1,200 books to 2,000 bookstores. So the channel opportunity has shrunk. So as a result of that, I have to look at my P&L and say, used to be, I could guarantee the money would come in 12 months. Now I look at 12 months and in years 2 through 5. And see, okay, where in that period of years 2 through 5 will I earn back? And that's often where, truth be told, 80% of our books are written off in the first year because they don't earn out. Wow. And that's our reality. So my job is to convince my board and my organization that we're in publishing because of a ministry. And you're willing to invest in me and my authors to make sure good, thoughtful, hope-filled resources are getting out there in the market.
Well, when you write a contract, do you put a figure, a solid figure, like I don't know, like you said, 75 or 10,000, or do you do a percentage of?
And it could vary from publisher to publisher, but typically, most publishers pay out in thirds. So let's say we offer you 15,000 for your book. When you sign the contract on day one, you'll get a check for $5,000. So we're paying you in good faith that you're going to get working on your book. You'll see another $5,000 upon delivery of an acceptable manuscript. The key word there is acceptable, okay? So when your manuscript comes in, you have to wait for me to deem it acceptable. And there's been a couple of times where the manuscript come in and I've said, this is not an acceptable manuscript. Send it back. Or the other option, sadly, is canceling the contract. But typically we'll send it back, and then you'll rewrite it, and then we'll get it, and then you'll get the check. And then the final payment is upon publication. So typically those in your contracts, that's pretty standard for industry, is upon signing, upon delivery of acceptable, and upon publication. And so then, if I can keep going on this one, you get those payments, so now you've got $15,000 in your bank account, and we sell your book, and we haven't made any money yet. And so you won't see any more money from the publisher until your book has earned back that $15,000 for me. So it's kind of a loan that I give you in good faith that this book is not only going to deliver $15,000 for your good work, but hopefully we're going to sell it for years to come. And so, you know, this is where hopefully in year two, you've recouped, that's the word, where you've earned back your $15,000 I've given you, and then you start getting what we call a royalty payment. And that varies from publisher to publisher. And that is a percentage. So it would be 10% of your net sales. Or
is that
12%.
The average, or what's the average, you'd say?
You know, it varies, because if it's a children's book, it could be 4% net, because it's a 36-page book. Mm-hmm. Or if it's a novel, it could be 16%. Or if you're John Gresham, you're at 25. So it really varies on both the category and the author and kind of, like, when you start out, you might be getting 10, 12, 14. And then on your fourth or fifth book, you're now in the 16, 18, 20 range. This gentleman here.
So piggyback on that, I have Les Sobey as my agent. He's really good. An agent will also help you decide. He'll negotiate that for you. He actually negotiated a lower advance so that I could, otherwise, if it's too high, you have to pay all that back before you see any royalties. So he'll look over that contract and help you negotiate. If you're a new author, probably won't get, that seems pretty high for a new author.
Right. So he's giving you all an example of a great agent. A good agent and or publisher, it is not necessarily the one that's going to get you the six-figure contract. What you really want is to get some stipend to allow you to go, you know, spend a month at a cabin in Edmonds writing versus, you know, $1 million, that's the only check you'll ever see. And then, also just from a PR relational side, we don't make any money and don't want to see you ever again. So I want to be with him. He says, no, let's go lower on the advance. So I only paid him $7,500. He earns it in the first 16 months and starts getting a nice revenue. And he's happy and I'm happy because it's not like, that's another book we had to write off this year.
And if you get less, he's very pro-crew.
I think he was on crew staff in Canada.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, he was my first publisher.
Oh, too funny.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
When Here's Life.
Here's Life, sure.
I did about five or six books.
Oh, how funny, yeah. The lady at the very back, Mason.
Yeah, I have
whatever.
Some,
yeah.
I have some friends in another country who are writers. I'm doing fiction work and cars. How possible is it for them to get published?
So the question is, how possible is it if I'm writing in another country to get published? Now, the question I have is, are they writing in English? Or,
they're writing in English, but they're not Americans.
Sure. That is sad but true. It's really hard for people outside the country to get published here. And part of the reason is simply promotional reasons. I published recently a book by Pete Gregg, who's with 24/7 Prayer Movement. He is based in the UK. He writes beautifully and thoughtfully. But he's very hard to sell because people are unaware of him. I'm looking at a project right now, actually. The writer is with the North American Missions Board over in Turkey. Beautiful writer. The challenge is, for me, is I'm going to wait until they come back on furlough and be able to have them in country to help sell it. And that really is our challenge. Americans are... if I can say this, are very provincial. If you're not, it's kind of like Grand Rapids. If you ain't Dutch, you ain't much. Here, it's true to say, in the Christian market, if you're not an American, you're looked at as scant. So it's really hard to sell, you know, a guy from Sri Lanka who's a brilliant theologian, but is not American. Mm-hmm. Yes?
I know sports books are often testimonies. Biographies.
Sure.
Seem to be quite popular in Christian bookstore. Is that true across the board?
The question was, are sports biographies very popular? Our Tyndale Momentum group, of which I'm a part of through the Alliance, has had a lot of success with Benjamin Watson and Tony Dungy, a number of those. And yes, it's true that they're very successful, partly because you've got high-profile people who are in the sports media. And so they're on ESPN every week. And so, you know, they put out a book that's very easy for, you know, today's show. Yeah.
There have been a lot of inspirational stories told through crew using athletes. Is there a market for that?
Is there a market for athlete stories? I think there is. We don't really do them. I know that Bethany was doing some, Baker was doing some. Where we've seen it successful at David C. Cook is devotionals for young adults or teenagers. So it's, you know, the gymnasts and the hockey players and all those kind of things. So yes, there is a market for it. Yes, sir.
She has a question.
No. I don't know if Matt could answer this or you, but
need your agent behind you.
On Staff with Crew, payment works differently. Are you familiar with like other nonprofit workers or maybe
I can speak for navigators. If you're a navigator staff person, you do not get an advance. If you're writing a book sort of based on ministry or staff time, you can, however, request from your supervisor. So this is getting navigators, so I'll let him speak to the crew. You can request like a sabbatical or time off just to write the book, and then you would be allowed to get an advance. But that's the navigator policy. Now they get royalties. So one of my best-selling authors is Jerry Bridges, and his widow gets a very nice royalty. But crew?
Yeah, so in crew we have a policy called the authorship and collaboration policy. You can write staff services and they'll gladly send it to you. It's 3 or 4 pages. It basically boils, I'm not in LD or HR, okay? So please don't say Matt Michelotta said this is how it works. Like, go read the document.
M-I-K-A.
Basically it's this. The first thing, very similar to NAPS, is you have to figure out if the content and time going into it belongs to crew or is your own. So if, let's say I'm on campus and I'm like, I'm going to do a campus devotional for the Greek system. And you start working on that with the guys you're discipling, and you're doing it every day during work hours. Like, it is possible that crew might come along and say, hey, the copyright, you did that during work hours, doing your work. For college students, like, we want to make sure that resource is available to all crew staff, and so the copyright's going to belong to us, and we're going to publish it through one of our in-house things, or if it's published elsewhere, they're going to want me involved in making sure how it gets sold, etc. Or if you make this determination with whoever you report to. So if it's determined, actually, this was kind of done either on your own time or it's not precisely in the mix of what you're doing in your ministry, whatever, that it belongs to you, you can sell it to, for instance, to NAV Press, let's say. And then, as a condition of employment, if you're full-time with crew, you can't just get a check directly from the publisher. The money will go to crew and is put into your staff account. So it actually is great as far as taxes. There are a lot of benefits. So for me, who's someone who's terrible at support raising and has done it really badly for a lot of years, my books have been kind of medium generous supporters who show up every couple of years and give me a one-time, three-time.
It's a partnership.
Donation. It's a partnership in my books. Like, faster and grow up to be bigger. But yes.
Yeah, and more thing related to crew or ministry people. One thing we often get are Bible studies or material that's been tested out there in the market, and we'll say, oh, that's we like this Bible study, but it's going to be a $4.99 Bible study, so no one's getting wealthy on that. So what we'll do is we'll make it a work for hire, and so what that means is it's a one-time pay. It's a work-for-hire Bible study. We'll pay you X dollars, and you keep that money, but there's no royalty. And then we actually own the copyright as a ministry. But you can, on your CV, you can say you're the author of the women's Bible study on Philemon or what have you. Okay. I think we're almost out of time, so we'll take one more question from this lady's agent there.
I was just going to add it. Google and other companies do the same thing that crew does. If you do it on work time, and if it's a work topic,
yes,
that's basically crew property.
So. Yeah, cool. There are catalogs. This is a NAV Press catalog if you want to pick one up. There's some here at the end of this table and here as well. And if you want to peruse the books that we've just recently done,